Hey everybody, welcome back to a new week at the Damage Report that will be 100% tension free.
Yeah.
I'm John Arola, and that noise you heard was Brooke.
Stick all over me.
Oh no, I tossed you too soon, you weren't ready for it. That's a good way to get off for the new week. Anyway, she's also here. She'll be ready at some point.
Yeah,
and at some we've got
point.
A lot that we're going to be talking
point.
About.
It's so sad.
Yeah,
no, I'm here. I'm ready.
You're good. You're getting ready. But what you need to get ready for is a huge amount of news that we have.
A lot of
not
news.
Only are we going to be talking about the new push for potentially impeaching Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh, we've also got the epic tale, the epic yarn, really, of Corn Pop. That'll be a lot of fun. A 2017 clip of Joe Biden talking about the time he almost got into a fight with a group of gang members. Very entertaining. I don't know how much it actually teaches us, but we're going to look at it and we're going to see what we can learn. We're also going to be joined a little bit later on the show by Crystal Ball, host of Rising on Hill TV. She's going to be joining us to talk about her recent appearance on Bill Maher's Real Time, the potential for war with Iran, and a number of other important topics. And we'll close out the show with Ben Shapiro's obsession with a certain part of Brett Kavanaugh's body. So that should be a lot of fun. As well.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Good to go?
Yeah.
Okay, it should be a lot of fun. Let's jump right into it with Brett Kavanaugh, of course. It only took about a minute or two after talk once again started online over the weekend about taking a hard look at what Brett Kavanaugh has done, the lies that he's told, for Donald Trump to absolutely lose it. And so he started to preemptively launch a defense of his Supreme Court justice, saying, now the radical left Democrats and their partner, the lamestream media, are after Brett Kavanaugh again, talking loudly of their favorite word, impeachment. He is an innocent man who's been treated horribly. Such lies about him, they want to scare him into turning liberal. That's, I can't speak for everyone, but I will say that's not my goal. He went on to say Brett Kavanaugh should start suing people for libel, or the Justice Department should come to his rescue. The lies being told about him are unbelievable. False accusations without recommendation. When does it stop? They're trying to influence his opinions, can't let that happen. So in both of those tweets, there was this idea that the reason we're talking about potential new allegations of sexual assault and previous ones that went uninvestigated is to influence his opinions, which that might be somebody's strategy, but I don't think it's most people's. Also, just quick note, the Justice Department is not the personal legal team of the president or of Supreme Court justices, and they can't be dispatched as if they're a guy that you hired.
We thought.
That they're our people, they're not yours, they're ours, they're not yours, just to bear in mind.
Is that the truth though? Is that how it happened throughout the Mueller debacle?
Well, look, he has turned it into something it's not supposed to be. That's
for sure.
True.
Yeah.
And it's headed by a guy, William Barr, who certainly sees it as his job to protect Donald Trump and Brett Kavanaugh. That's not the way that it's supposed to go. And so, look, as of right now, the new allegations, the new report from the New York Times about an incident that supposedly happened with Brett Kavanaugh way back when he was in college. I can't go into too much detail about that right now because the New York Times sort of walked back a little bit of it today. So we're going to give it a little bit of time for the dust to settle to say whether or not there was anything to that particular allegation. But whether that allegation was true or not, I think it's odd how quickly and how thoroughly people moved on from Brett Kavanaugh once the swearing in was done. And all of the worries that we had about the numerous different accusations, tons and tons of people saying that he had done either extremely inappropriate things or attempted rape, the numerous lies he told on the stand that we know were lies, we knew at the time, it was disheartening to see people move on so quickly.
Yeah, but you know what, to be fair, for people who just like out in the communities, what else can they do but move on? What happened was they moved on quickly after he was confirmed. Because there's nothing else they can do. Mm-hmm. The people in power moved on before he was confirmed.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and Susan Collins mentally moved on a long time ago.
A long time ago, completely. Yeah. And then the president was didn't even care. There were so many allegations of the feds not calling people back, not taking things seriously, not investigating. I mean, everyone else moved on.
That's true. Yeah, and at some point, if you feel like the people with an actual ability to do something about it aren't going to do anything, and you're continually being assaulted on a dozen different fronts, I guess you do have to.
Yeah.
So we're gonna have more on this in just a sec.
Okay.
Tomorrow on the show, we're gonna be joined by actress and activist Piper Perabo, who was actually at the Kavanaugh hearings, was arrested during those hearings. So we're gonna be talking a little bit about the renewed fight against Brett Kavanaugh with her as well. We could go through so many of his lies on the stand. There's articles collecting tons and tons of them. We obviously don't have time to do that. So we're gonna talk about a few of the lingering concerns, also new ones. For instance, Senator Coons recently said over the weekend that several individuals contacted his office with additional information about Brett Kavanaugh. This is going back some time, and the FBI was not interested in investigating it. Separate report, FBI did not investigate one more credible accusation against Brett Kavanaugh. And that was the story at the time too. We knew the FBI was begrudgingly dragged into doing an extremely short investigation to give cover to Senate Republicans, and that was effectively it. And all of the lies he told during the actual hearing, nobody had any time to care about that because he was sworn in almost immediately afterward. And so we're gonna talk about just a couple of them. So one has to do with documents that were apparently arguably stolen. Manuel Miranda, Republican Senate aide, had improperly obtained and circulated thousands of private Democratic files detailing strategies for opposing Bush's judicial nominees. Kavanaugh, way back in 2004 during his confirmation hearings then, said that he never saw any of the files that Miranda obtained. He said, "I was not aware of that matter in any way whatsoever until I learned it in the media." However, Senator Pat Leahy has produced an email that Miranda sent to Kavanaugh, among others, passing along some of the improperly obtained files. So that was simply a lie. Any comment? We have more too.
Yeah, let's go.
Okay, so in 2004, Kavanaugh said he did not personally handle the nomination of Judge William Pryor, who famously called Roe v. Wade and the legal right to abortion, quote, the worst abomination in the history of constitutional law. Kavanaugh said, no, I was not involved in handling his nomination. But as the Washington Post reported, between 2002 and 2003, Kavanaugh is included in several emails referencing that nomination. In one exchange between Kavanaugh and White House aide Kyle Sampson, Kavanaugh is asked, how did the prior interview go? He responded, call me. In another email chain, Kavanaugh is included in a conversation about a conference call to coordinate plans and efforts around Pryor. So we're bringing up these to give you an idea that it's not just a problem that he lied to senators just a year ago. It's that this is a history of him getting through confirmation hearings by just directly lying. And again, under oath, breaking the law, literally, and then suffering no consequences for it. Doing quite well for himself, actually, as a result of it.
Yeah. You know what's so funny, though? Just like the question there, did Kavanaugh perjure himself? Before we found out any of this new stuff, just by watching the most recent confirmation hearings, I feel like one could come up with a possible answer for themselves. Mm-hmm. You know?
Exactly.
he told us he kept a detailed calendar of his high school activities and that he still had it in adulthood.
Mm-hmm. I have so many of my calendars from high school. And bear in mind, it wasn't that Kavanaugh said, yes, I did a lot of inappropriate stuff when I was younger. I used to drink to excess. It's a mistake that a lot of young kids make. I did things that I regret. I said disrespectful things about people
I
know.
Didn't say any of that.
But I never raped anyone. Right. That wasn't the claim. The claim was, I never did anything.
Right.
I was great and awesome. Sure, I liked beer, but you know, even though I was in the 100 kegs club, I never blacked out ever. Didn't have sex until I was 72 years old. Never did anything wrong to anybody. That was the claim that was made.
Yeah.
And so, yes, it was so apparent that he was lying. And look, we're gonna skip over a few more of these. They'll be relitigated probably this week, but there are a lot of people now calling for his impeachment, including numerous presidential candidates in the Democratic primary. Bernie Sanders wrote, the revelations today confirm what we already knew. During his hearing, Kavanaugh faced credible accusations and likely lied to Congress. I support any appropriate constitutional mechanism to hold him accountable. Elizabeth Warren says last year the Kavanaugh nomination was rammed through the Senate without a thorough examination of the allegations against him. Confirmation is not exoneration, and these newest revelations are disturbing. Like the man who appointed him, Kavanaugh should be impeached. Kamala Harris says, I sat through these hearings. Brett Kavanaugh lied to the US Senate and most importantly to the American people. He was put on the court through a sham process and his place on the court is an insult to the pursuit of truth and justice. He must be impeached. That's a very good statement there. Notably, others too, Castro, a few others. Vice President Biden though, not a fan of Kavanaugh. Not pushing for impeachment though. He says at this point, we must follow the evidence to wherever it leads. Doing this the right way is critically important to getting the truth and restoring the American people's faith in their government. Does not call for impeachment, at least at this time. Mm-hmm. Gotta differentiate himself somehow, I guess. We don't have much time. We probably shouldn't play the video clip. Someone on Twitter shared a video clip of Kavanaugh back during, I think it was the swearing in ceremony, interacting with his wife.
Okay.
And the wife's body language, I'm not gonna play it. She looks like a woman.
How long is it?
40 seconds.
Don't play it.
This doesn't mean anything.
Okay.
Doesn't mean anything. This was shared on Twitter by Alaticus. Just take a look.
Let's see. Okay.
door out the way.
So they're sort of getting in line. He pats her on the back, harder than I've ever patted anyone on the back.
You're so ridiculous.
She sheepishly looks at him out of the corner of her eye with a plastered-on smile. Kid's having fun. She looks more incredible than I've been in my entire life.
Yeah, listen, here's a big thing about all of this is that his career ambitions, okay, mm-hmm. embarrassed his family. It yeah. put them through a process that seems any normal person, any average person would be mortified. Yeah. And maybe that was worth it. But I think that's a large part of the conversation here. A lot of the people that Trump has nominated in certain positions mm-hmm. have, and some of them haven't gone on to actually work in those positions. Some of them have, after way too long, stepped down. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people are willing to embarrass their family, put their family through yeah. a horrible process, knowing that this is going to be talked about. This is going to be talked about. I'm going to have to defend this. I'm going to have to deny this.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting decision.
It is. And you know, just bear in mind, I mean, that event that we just saw basically is for a person working in the legal profession mm-hmm. in America, that is the culmination of the greatest hope one could ever hope.
Right. Hmm.
The face I saw was not the face of a person who was basking in the greatest thing that could ever happen to your partner. I'm just saying that. Now, bear in mind, she's also standing next to Donald Trump. That would make anyone uncomfortable. So we can't say anything from that video. It's just interesting. Thank you, Alaticus. Okay, we're going to take a short break. We come back, Corn Pop, after this.
I liked beer. Still like beer.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
If you've been watching the Democratic debates, you know that Joe Biden likes to spin some long, sometimes complicated, both for the viewer and also for the person saying it, stories from time to time. Well, that apparently has been going on for some time because a video from 2017 recently was unearthed, and it involves Joe Biden at a pool telling a story about his run-in with Corn Pop. And it's a little bit of a weird story, but we're going to run through it and see if there's anything we can learn from this. Now, we would love to play you the video, but it's from a local news source and they will literally destroy our entire lives. So I'm just going to read what Biden said. I'm going to go through it kind of fast because it's a little bit long. So it might sound a little bit more put together, but at some point you should listen to the video and know that it's a little bit rambly and weird. So he says, Corn Pop was a bad dude and he ran a bunch of bad boys. And back in those days, to show how things have changed, one of the things you had to use, if you used pomade in your hair, you had to wear a baby cap. And so he was up on the board, again, this is at a pool where Joe Biden was apparently a lifeguard 125 years ago, and wouldn't listen to me. I said, "Hey, Esther, you off the board or I'll come up and drag you off." Well, he came off and he said, "I'll meet you outside." My car was mostly, these were all public housing behind us, he's gesturing off in the distance. My car, there was a gate on here. I parked my car outside the gate and he said, "I'll be waiting for you." He was waiting for me with three guys with straight razors, not a joke. There was a guy named Bill Wright, the only white guy, and he did all the pools. He was a mechanic. And I said, "What am I going to do?" And he said, "Come down here in the basement where all the mechanics where all the pool builder is. You know the chain? There used to be a chain that went across the deep end, and he cut off a 6-foot length of chain and folded it up and he said, you walk out with that chain and you walk to the car and you say, you may cut me, man, but I'm gonna wrap this chain around your head. I said, you're kidding me. He said, no, if you don't come back. And he was right. So I walked out with the chain and I walked up to my car. And in those days, you remember the straight razors? You had to bang them on the curb, getting them rusty, putting them in the rain barrel, getting them rusty. And I looked at him, but I was smart then. I said, first of all, when I tell you to get off the board, you get off the board and I'll kick you out again. But I shouldn't have called you Esther Williams. And I apologize for that. I apologize. But I didn't know that apology was gonna work. And Joe Biden went unstraight razored that day and lived to lifeguard another day.
So my thing is, what is the point of telling this story? We can spend a lot of time on whether it makes sense, mm-hmm. whether Corn Pop exists as a former gang leader. What is the point of telling this story? Is Joe Biden looking for a hood pass?
I wasn't sure if you meant what was the point of him telling or what was the point of me telling.
No.
Because I'm not really sure of either. But this was how I spent my weekend with Corn Pop, with people photoshopping
corn.
I'm
not talking about you. I'm just wondering.
Yes.
What is even the point? It feels like, hey, let me tell you how I click with the blacks.
My guess would be that that's what it is.
Okay,
he was surrounded by black people. He was in other parts of the story, which again, you can watch this whole video. We're not gonna show you 10 minutes of local news footage. He said that he had been a lifeguard back in blank small town America. And one of the things that made him interesting to the people who went there, because mm-hmm. it was predominantly black swimmers, was that they had never talked to a white person before except
for
him.
Which also cannot be possible in a city that is like more than
70% white.
No black person has that experience. What?
No, first of all, Joe Biden just said that they had that experience, so I don't know where this is coming from. guess that what you guessed is why.
Okay.
That he told the story of Corn Pop, who, by the way, I don't know for sure if the story is true. I have a feeling it's embellished. But Corn Pop apparently did live. If you bring this up, this is from Daniel Dale on Twitter. There was an obituary for Mr. Pop, as he is known. Second from the left, William Morris Corn Pop. So he did live. I believe he was a member of either the Romans or the golden dragon head chompers. Biden has told multiple stories.
Does it say that in his obituary?
That I don't think is in the obituary.
Okay, because we are not gonna take this elderly man that passed away and could have had this sweet nickname from his grandma. We're not gonna call him a gang leader, okay?
Yeah, okay.
We don't know who
we just know
that there was a black person
named Corn Pop
in Delaware who was nicknamed after cereal. And it's a delicious cereal.
Suspiciously named after cereal. So as a lot of people have pointed out, the whole thing seems odd. And yes, there's the obituary and supposedly associate of Joe Biden confirmed that he knew of Corn Pop at the time, contemporaneously. Maybe that's true. Story's still weird. You're talking about straight razors and beating somebody, choking them with a chain. He's surrounded by children, by the way. It is a public pool after all. And look, it is a very rambling performance. Now, the upside for Joe Biden is that it was an incredibly rambling performance where he had a hard time getting his thoughts together and he sounded like everyone's great granddad. But that was in 2017, which means that this is not a new thing for him. He has had these problems for a couple of years. But it's a really weird story.
It is, and you know what? Black people aren't so weird and dangerous and scary and spooky that you get points because you spoke to one.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I just think just even telling this and the reason behind telling this, before even getting to how weird it is and how it's likely a lie and how it's just so outrageous, just the fact that, so what?
I am curious if at the next debate, someone will ask him about Corn Pop.
I just hope they don't.
I hope they don't. By the way.
Because honestly, I wish now that if we could go back that he wasn't asked about his comments about slavery not being his problem. I wish that he wasn't, because then we wouldn't have had to sit through this weird pushing of this horrible false rhetoric.
The record player?
That black people can't be good parents.
Because they don't, because their kids don't hear words.
Because their kids don't hear words.
I know.
And they don't know how to parent. They want to parent. They don't know how to parent.
So they should be taught. Yeah. Yeah, there was a little bit of conversation about that, but he kind of just skated by. That was fine. And then, but it's that with like the corn pop, it's like, it starts to sort of paint a picture at some point.
Yeah.
And it's a certain picture. I'm not saying it's the picture, but it's a certain picture. And I think it's worth having a conversation about, a conversation that, at least by the mainstream media, has not even started to happen yet. By the way, Esther Williams was an American competitive swimmer, so he was calling Corn Pop a girl when he told him to get off the thing. So just to give you another idea. Anyway, we're gonna take a short break. We come back, Crystal Ball is gonna be joining us to break down a lot of the important news of the day. This Saturday, drones did a great deal of damage to a major Saudi oil facility. And in the immediate aftermath of that, right off the bat, Donald Trump made clear what the US stance would be following this attack, tweeting, "Saudi Arabia should fight their own wars, which they won't, or pay us an absolute fortune to protect them and their great wealth, trillions of dollars." Oh wait, sorry, that was from 2014, that was before he was president. Oh no, what he tweeted over the weekend was, "Saudi Arabia oil supply was attacked. There is reason to believe that we know the culprit, are locked and loaded depending on verification, but are waiting to hear from the kingdom as to who they believe was the cause of this attack and under what terms we would proceed. So as soon as we get our marching orders from Saudi Arabia, then we will dispatch the destroyers." Joining us now to discuss this and other topics, host of Rising on the Hills TV, Crystal Ball, welcome to the show.
Hey, good to see you guys.
Great to have you here. You're joining us on a day of a lot of big news. It looks like the belief that we were in the clear on a war with Iran, that might have been premature. What do you think about this?
Yeah, there was a lot of relief that I felt as well when John Bolton resigned or was fired or whatever as national security advisor. But clearly the president, Pompeo, et cetera, there's been a media narrative that the president really isn't an interventionist, that he doesn't want to engage in a lot of other wars overseas. But from his rhetoric coming from his Twitter account, not just in this incident, but throughout these escalating tensions with Iran, I think we see another narrative. Look, I know a lot of pundits will want to say, oh, he's just blustering, locked and loaded. He's just being his normal brash self, but nothing's going to come of it. But let's be clear, this is a very dangerous game. And there is absolutely no reason why we should be putting American lives at risk in any way to defend Saudi oil interests. It's insane.
I couldn't agree more. And also, I mean, this has sort of been a story for at least 2 years, but it always strikes me as odd that from right-wing politicians and pundits, if you mention an individual Muslim person or Muslim country, they're gonna respond negatively. Mm-hmm. 99% of the time, the 1% is if you bring up Saudi Arabia. And then suddenly it's, these are our greatest allies. We will do literally anything that they ask. We'll spend trillions on another war. That's always struck me as a very weird dichotomy.
Well, and let's be clear about this regime. If we care about human rights at all, this is a regime that allowed schoolgirls to burn to death rather than get rescued because they were not wearing the proper modest attire, so the religious police would not allow them to be rescued. I mean, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about beheadings in the public square. We're talking about, you know, obviously MBS and the regime having murdered Jamal Khashoggi. That's who we're talking about here. And so at a point where we are transitioning or should be transitioning away from a fossil fuel economy anyway, now is the time to focus on green energy, to focus on the future and make a clean break with defending Saudi, having them be our close allies and looking the other way at their human rights abuses.
And unfortunately, it looks like we're moving the opposite direction. It looks like there is the possibility of military action, especially as even just today, on both sides of the aisle, so to speak, there's been this sort of renewing of tensions, pushing for something to happen. On Fox and Friends, Brian Kilmeade said, "I think this cannot go without retribution." And he also spoke with Senator Coons, a Democrat. Let's take a look at a short bit of video, and I want to get your reaction.
It seems credible that the Houthis don't have the sort of advanced drones that carried out this crippling strike on Saudi oil facilities. My hope is that the president will consult with his generals, his diplomats, his advisors, will look hard at the intelligence. Iran is one of the most dangerous state sponsors of terrorism. This may well be the thing that calls for military action against Iran, if that's what the intelligence supports. This is a moment where Iran is really pushing our resolve and is really testing to see whether we're actually gonna stand up.
So I have to say, it feels like 2002 all of a sudden. What do you think?
Yeah, indeed. And look, the military industrial complex is a real thing. It has real power in DC, and certainly not just on the right. There has been a bipartisan pro-war consensus in DC driven by that military industrial complex. I mean, frankly, to bring presidential politics into this, whatever you think of Tulsi Gabbard, this is part of why I think her voice is so important in this race, and also part of why I think she's been so pushed and otherized and smeared by the media in this race, is because she has been unequivocal in challenging this bipartisan foreign policy consensus. Because the bottom line is, there's always some way that you can gin up a case for war, that you can start those drums beating in a march for war. You can always say, our interests are threatened. This is an existential crisis. We have to support our allies. You can always make the case. And so in something like this, again, we weren't attacked, right? It was Saudi's oil interests that were attacked. Why would anything was even close to vacation for war?
I couldn't agree more. We're gonna leave it there for now. We're gonna see as this situation develops. But I wanna bring up something else that happened over the weekend. And that was that Bernie Sanders had a very emotional interaction at one of his events just a few days ago with a vet who was suffering from crippling medical bills. Here's a section of what happened.
Now they're saying that you know, I didn't re-sign or do something or something.
How are you going to pay off?
I can't. I'm going to kill myself.
John, stop it. You're not going to kill yourself.
I can't deal with this. I have Huntington's disease. Do you know how hard that is? You know, you probably don't, do you? I can't drive. I can barely take care of myself.
All right. I'll let you down later at the end of the meeting, okay?
Thank you.
Okay.
And that is, of course, devastating. The man has $139,000 in medical bills. He appears to have been screwed over on his insurance. After that interaction, Bernie Sanders actually started a thread on Facebook. What's the most absurd medical bill you've ever received? And as of this morning, it had 24,000 responses already, because this is a serious issue. Crystal, your thoughts?
While the media fixates on whether Bernie Sanders is too angry, men like this, a veteran who served our country, is thinking of killing himself because of medical bills in one of the wealthiest countries on the planet. It is frankly completely unacceptable. And if we're not all outraged, I don't know what we're doing.
And you know, one of the weirdest responses I've seen to people pushing for Medicare for All from some in the mainstream media is, Bernie keeps claiming that people don't like their insurance. That's not true. Like this idea that it's not just that they have personally benefited from the status quo on healthcare, it's that secretly lots of Americans are actually happy with the situation, even as more and more experiencing medical bankruptcies, not getting the care that they need, you know, all of that. It's been really weird to watch.
Well, and here's the other thing, John. Like, people care about themselves and their families, yes. But we also care about our brothers and sisters who may not be as lucky as we are. I mean, look, I am blessed. I know I'm going to be able to get the care that I need for myself and my family. I'm incredibly lucky. That doesn't mean I'm satisfied with this incredibly immoral. I mean, that's what it is. It is an immoral status quo. And if you're defending it, to me, that is a non-starter in terms of being a Democratic candidate. You see the industry talking points flowing out of the mouth of Joe Biden and some of the other centrists in the race. I just find it completely unacceptable. I can't believe that we have Democrats who are making the case from Republican industry talking points against having health care for all of our citizens. It's so wrong.
You know what, I'd like to get your thoughts just on what we saw a few days back. At the last Democratic debate, we had the first 30 minutes or so was pretty much about Medicare for All, where you had everybody basically claiming that their plan was Medicare for All, even though 2/3 of them at least were simultaneously attacking Medicare for All as financially irresponsible, if not impossible. And so what do you think about the state of the conversation inside of the Democratic Party about what needs to happen with healthcare?
Well, it is incredible the way that Bernie Sanders has set the frame of this conversation and a number of others. But I think it's a sign of the success and the appeal of Medicare for All that you have everybody basically copying the name, right? You've got Medicare Choice, Medicare for America, Medicare for those who want it. It's sort of absurd. Look, I think the bottom line is you are either committed to healthcare for all, and you are either committed to getting the profit motive out of healthcare where it does not belong, or you're not. I mean, it's really not more complicated than that. It's quite simple. Do you support healthcare rather than support focusing on care rather than profits? That's the bottom line.
That is the bottom line. So that's where we'll leave it. We're going to take a short break, Crystal, if you'll stick around. We got a couple more topics to talk about after this. On the last episode of Real Time with Bill Maher, he had an interesting theory about how Democrats could possibly win in 2020. Here's Bill.
I think this might be one of those years where it's the last the discussion Mike and I were having. It's that they can't get over that centrist versus socialist thing. So Elizabeth Warren at some point takes Bernie's voters. He drops out. It's Warren and Biden. And they go to the convention, and it's deadlocked. This has happened before in American politics, and they need a compromise candidate. I'm looking hard at Amy Klobuchar. You know why? Because, like, this is not an insult to Amy Klobuchar. I like you. But when they put generic Democrat on the ballot, they win.
And joining us now is the person from that clip with that very knowing smile. Cristobal.
That's funny.
What are your thoughts about Bill's strategy there?
I think my faith pretty much said it all there. But, you know, Bill is very well-intentioned. I think he really just is so nervous about the idea of Democrats have to beat Trump that he is buying into the narrative that's very ambient in our culture, that you have to run a centrist to win. And he thinks if you just have, like, the most sort of plain vanilla candidate on the ballot, that's the best way to do it. And look, obviously, I completely disagree with that. I think the reason that Democrats have lost is because they haven't stood for anything, right? So voters think that they're full of it. We ran a centrist last time, I might remind you, and Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. It didn't go so well. So, I don't think that's the right approach. I think you want a candidate who's authentic, who says what they think, who stands up for something and is ready to fight for the American people. And that resonates. It's not about exactly where you are on the ideological spectrum. It's about who people think is going to be a fighter for them, bottom line.
Yeah. Look, I sort of get that narrative is out there and that he appears to be a believer in that. I don't know exactly why his thought is then Amy Klobuchar. That's who we go to first. But where I'm coming from is, what if hypothetically we had some evidence with which to choose a candidate? What if we had numbers, like a poll maybe, about who is generating enthusiasm inside of the Democratic electorate right now? What if we had some polls about how these different candidates matched up against Trump in states across the country, maybe even in Texas, states that aren't normally in play? What if we had that sort of evidence and then chose the strongest candidate based on who is already doing extremely well against Donald Trump? What do you think about that?
It's interesting you should mention that, because we do have quite a lot of polls that show Bernie Sanders doing very well against Donald Trump, which completely blows up this whole narrative that you have to run a centrist. I mean, look, the polls also say that Biden does well against Trump. Those are the two candidates who poll the best today against Trump. Now, a lot of things can change between now and Election Day. But I also think it's important to look beyond this question of who's most electable, which is a very debatable proposition, and look at, we have to do more than just defeat Trump. What is more powerful to me and scarier than Trump is the movement that brought him to power, this right-wing Trumpist movement that brought him to power that we see on the rise around the world. And in order to deal with that, you not only have to get rid of Trump, you actually have to deliver some real tangible benefits for the working class. Which candidate do you think is best suited and has the best theory of change in order to actually deliver for the multiracial working class? In my estimation, Amy Klobuchar and Joe Biden are probably not the ones who are going to bring the real change and fundamentally shift the dynamics in this country that you need to.
I largely agree with that as well. So I'm curious, as you point out right now, in most polls at least, directly matching up the candidate against Donald Trump, Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders do the best. Of course, a lot can change in a year. If it does end up being Joe Biden, and he is after all the front runner, how nervous are you about the way that general election could develop? How nervous are you thinking about the election day coming up next year?
Terrified, frankly, terrified. I mean, if you just look at this past debate performance, and I know the pundits judge Biden on this tremendous curve, but I read back the transcript. Mm-hmm. He was so far below what any of the other candidates on the stage were able to do just in terms of articulating a vision, articulating his thoughts on any particular question. The idea of him on the stage with Donald Trump going head to head, it's terrifying. I find it very, very troubling. And I hope that when people are evaluating this race, as they watch the next debate, as they watch candidates making appearances on the trail and on television and interviews, I hope they really think hard about who is up to the task of taking on Donald Threat, who's a tremendous threat to our future of the planet.
Yeah, if they did end up on the stage together, I don't know who we'd have. Would we have Joe Biden of the last year or two sort of fumbling in his thoughts, or would we have the strong, virile Joe Biden that stood up to Corn Pop low so many years ago? I honestly don't know. Okay, so let's turn to one last topic just briefly, because big news today. 49,000 workers at a number of different GM plants have walked off the job, an absolutely massive strike going on right now. They're pushing for reopening plants that have recently been closed, raising wages and allowing some temporary workers to become permanent workers. This is a huge action going on right now. What do you think of it?
Look, I think, first of all, it's never good when workers have to strike, right? This is a hardship for them, and I 100% stand in solidarity with these workers, and I hope the company comes to their senses and gives them the contract that they deserve. But I do look at this as part of a broader pattern. We have seen more labor strife and labor actions in this country over the past couple of years than we have seen in decades. Those who want to write off unions as a relic of the past are dead wrong. Renewed unionization, renewed energy in the labor movement is what could ultimately save the middle class in this country. And so I applaud them. I applaud the Teamsters standing in solidarity. They said they're not going to deliver any of GM's cars while the strike is ongoing. That's awesome. And I would just say I hope that everybody backs these workers up, and that everybody who can joins a union.
So right now we have as President Donald Trump, who seems to like the police officers union, and that's where it ends. He's not a fan of pretty much any other. What do you think it could mean for movements like this, whether it's auto workers or teachers strikes or perhaps some other organization, if we were to have someone who is strongly pro-union occupying the Oval Office?
I mean, it's everything, because this is another place where there's been really a bipartisan consensus. Democrats have occasionally talked a good game on unions, but really for decades haven't done anything to make it easier to organize or even just to enforce the laws as they exist, the rights that workers have to organize. So having an extremely pro-union president who's actually going to fight for legislation to allow workers to organize in their workplace would be incredible. Look, the economy is changing. New tactics are being used to classify workers as contractors so that they can't unionize, so that they can't get the benefits that they're entitled to. Lots of workforces are being automated. You know, fast food franchises have fought for the right to keep their workers separate so that you can't organize across fast food locations. These are all things that make a tremendous difference in terms of talking about rates of unionization. And by the way, if you look at the charts, and I believe this is one of the most important and undercovered trends in our lifetime, John. As unions have declined, the middle class has declined. It has gone hand in hand. If you want to rebuild the middle class, you need to up the rates of unionization in this country. It's really that simple.
And some of the candidates on the Democratic side have plans. Not all of them, but some would like to accomplish that. Crystal Ball, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, John.
We're gonna take a short break here. We come back a little bit more on Kavanaugh after this. There are a lot of allegations about Brett Kavanaugh, and we can have serious conversations about each. We can, but some people can't. Listen to this.
We've had a bevy of public figures in recent years who have had their genitalia described on national television by people who allege sexual assault. Right? Stormy Daniels famously described President Trump's genitalia. Bill Clinton's genitalia. Details of such were talked about. Nobody has yet described Kavanaugh's genitalia. Now, that's not dispositive. Maybe they were generic. Who knows? But the bottom line is we've had no corroborating details on any of these stories. All of them apparently happened in public places with other witnesses available. And not one witness has been there who corroborates any of these stories. It's unbelievable. And yet the Democrats are still saying that Kavanaugh should be kicked off the Supreme Court based on what? A new report from a guy who says that he was at a party and saw a male grab Kavanaugh's penis, which, by the way, would be sexual assault, and then thrust it into the hand of a female who says she doesn't remember the incident. It seems like you might remember that incident. Just going to put that out there.
Can I just say something really quick? Just really quick. Because I guess another man grabbing his penis would be sexual assault. Mm-hmm. Why is he walking around with his pants down at the party?
Mm-hmm. Why is that okay? You're saying, why is the assumption that that's okay. Mm-hmm. It's the thing you're saying that happened with a woman. That's where I have a problem.
I don't know.
Especially when, by the way, if he walked around a party with his pants down,
so weird.
Then he is 100% lying when he was doing his confirmation, where he was like, I was a choir boy. I never did anything.
Yeah.
He didn't say, oh, I walked around with my pants off all the time. I just didn't touch anyone with it. Okay, so look, really fast. We can broaden the conversation.
Back to the beginning.
The idea that if the penis description doesn't fit, you must acquit.
You have been waiting your whole life to say that.
I literally just thought of it. And honestly, not that good. But you know, I went with it. Ben Shapiro was calling out, like, at long last, can we not at least know if it bends to the left or the right?
This is so outlandish.
But we're not just making fun of this because he's weird and I find his spastic head shaking to be amusing. It's that look at the way right-wing men, and not even, some men who aren't right-wing, approach this.
Like that's a logical defense.
Yeah.
That he thought of that and thought of it.
An ever-moving goalpost for what women need to abide by for us to maybe take you seriously, and let's keep it real, they would never take her seriously anyway. I want extremely detailed information about what a man's penis looked like that was shoved at your face 30 years ago. And if you can't provide that, you're a liar.
Right, so like a woman says someone's penis was put into her hand at a party, and the problem is she didn't take notes.
Yeah.
Got it. So like it's like just so we're clear. Thanks, Ben. That is so weird.
It's bizarre, but we point it out because him saying that, from our point of view, that's really weird.
Right.
Why are you so obsessed with this? But from his fans' point of view, that is everything they want from him.
It's a good logical point.
Yeah, give me what's sort of a titillating, sort of fun excuse to never have to pay attention to what women say and certainly never have to trust what they say about their experiences.
Yeah, that is just too much, yeah.
He provides that for them. And look, in terms of it being so long, I was thinking recently, I didn't go to a lot of parties when I was much younger. I was not particularly popular and also kind of resentful about it. But I remember a party I went to in high school.
Okay,
the one. Okay, I remember about this party, I remember one person who was there.
Okay.
And I remember roughly where in Bridgeport, Connecticut it was.
Okay.
Aside from that, I don't remember anything about it. I know that it happened, that's what I remember. That's it. I don't even remember that person's name. I just sort of remember who they are. So to expect that I'll remember what someone's pubes were like, what is wrong with you?
To be fair, you and Brett Kavanaugh are very different people for a lot of reasons. One important reason, you didn't keep a date book.
That's true.
About every waking moment of your high school career.
Yeah, that's true. Thank you. I was really worried where that was going because you had the look on your face like you were going to throw me under a Kavanaugh.
No, I mean,
which is where nobody wants to be, but unfortunately, far too many people have had to be. Okay. Anyway, serious concerns. That's going to be the story of the week. We don't need to know what his junk is like. Those are my thoughts. I'm sticking to them.
Yeah.
Anyway,
as always, podcast? Do you have time for that?
No, we don't have time, unfortunately. Okay. But thank you so much, Brooke Thomas.
Thanks
great
for
to have you here.
Me.
You have a podcast. Look it up.
I do. It's called Controlling Our Narrative.
And that's all the time we have. See you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.